Pickaxe.
Hey all, I'm Dr. Alok Kanoja, but the internet knows me as Dr. K. I spent 7 years studying to become a monk and then became a psychiatrist. I want to tell you a little bit about my podcast, Healthy Gamer GG, where we combine my clinical experience of practicing psychiatry and sprinkle in years of experience as a meditation teacher and sort of focus on spirituality. So on the podcast, we're going to approach very common everyday problems from each of these lenses. And what we really do well is blend science and spirituality to create the most accessible solutions for people for their everyday problems. So check us out at Healthy Gamer GG on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple.
Hello and welcome to the podcast version of this week's One Life Left radio show. I'm Simon Byron.
I'm Steve Curran.
And we're joined in this intro by our super special guest this week, Charles Cecil. Hello, Charles.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Ooh, first show back. You know, a little bit rusty, easing our way back into work. We packed a lot in, didn't we?
We really did. I couldn't remember how to talk. At the start, so how do you do this? What's going on? But by the end, absolutely loved it today. I'm really, really happy to be back. And also, what a way to start with you, Charles. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, Steve, you're too kind. No, it's a real pleasure. It's always, I was so excited when you invited me. And thank you for doing so.
Now, ordinarily, Charles, you use us as part of your promotional activities. You come on and talk to us when you've got things to pimp, don't you? But which you don't do right now. So we covered fast.
Yeah, Steve actually gave me a very good life lesson about Twitter. He reprimanded me and he said, don't use Twitter. Let Twitter use you to do what you want. And it was such a profound thing to say. Obviously, that was before it all went horribly wrong with Elon. But am I allowed to say that? Or is that too controversial?
Yeah, no, you absolutely. Listen, this is the podcast intro. You can say whatever the hell you want now. We're not subject to the same legal restrictions, we don't think.
You can even say the word that Simon made you promise not to say. On the show, in this bit of the show.
Yeah. I better not. But no, but seriously, Steve, you're absolutely right. And it really got me thinking. It's completely changed the way that I've approached social media. So thank you for those pearls, those pearls of wisdom. That's the expression I meant to say.
I like the idea, because we do talk about this during the show, and we have referenced it many times, of you emerging from the sea in front of other men's wives. Because there was a time when I was up in Scarborough last year and you cycled over. And the first thing that you did, you cycled over from York to Scarborough. The first thing you did when you got there was take your top off and talk to other men's wives with your top off. Anyway, I like the idea. That in the last recorded incident of you doing this, if you emerging from the sea in Croatia, Steve and his wife are there. They had no idea that you were in the water, but you sort of walk out in your speedos, and then Steve just looks up and goes, "Don't use Twitter. Let Twitter use you." And then you turn around and go back into the sea. So it should be.
Oh, you know, that was such fun. Steve, I have to say, you hosted that so well as well. That was just great. Anyway, sorry, Simon.
Stop this, Charles. He gets enough of it.
I don't. I'm happy for... Listen, Charles, this section of the show can go on as long as you want. So please tell me more about how great my hosting was in Croatia.
He didn't mean that, Charles.
I did.
Ordinarily, you come on with a purpose, something to reveal, but this was just a general chat. Was it all okay for you, Charles?
Well, I mean, I think it's phenomenal that you guys, 2006 you started, did you? I mean, that's 2006, 2016,
that's 2026, simply too
that's
long.
17 years. I mean, that's
simply too long to be doing anything.
And you know, you would have thought that after 17 years, you guys would have gone off the boil and you wouldn't have anything new to say. But the opposite is true. You know, every week you're revealing something incredible. I mean, it's a reflection on yourselves and about the games industry and how dynamic it is. You know, really,
it is fair to say we have kept the standard constant for 17 years, haven't we? Which is impressive in some sense.
You have indeed. And it was not that long ago that you were broadcasting from GDC. You haven't done that for a bit, have you? Or have you?
You turned that into a question because you're not sure. So maybe, maybe Charles, your homework until the next time you're on, which, you know, could be in a few weeks, is to plough through the archives of One Life Left and find out whether we've been back at GDC. We'll be there. Okay. We'll be back there this year with you, perhaps.
Ooh.
We're working that out.
Ooh. Can I give you an exclusive reveal, please?
What, from the Apple show?
Yeah. It is. Oh gosh.
Absolutely.
You saw through my my crafty. Oh dear. You've got it out of me again. You've got it out of me. You're too clever, you two.
And that is what's known in the industry as a call forward, because you are about to listen to the first episode of One Life Left of the new series. Simon, do you want to launch it?
I'm going to push play right now. Here's the show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Love you. Bye.
Hello, good evening, happy new year, and welcome to One Life Left, Britain's favourite video game radio show. My name is Steve Curran.
Hello, I am Simon Byron.
Happy new year, Simon.
Happy new year to you, Steve. Last time I spoke to you, I, unknown to me, had COVID.
Did you? Yeah. How close were we at the time?
Well, not as close as we were when I joke-kissed my brother-in-law on New Year's Eve and tested positive for COVID shortly afterwards. Ooh. I know.
Did you find it funny then?
Very fortunately, no one else got it. So I tested positive on January the 2nd. So I spoke to you New Year's Eve, didn't I?
You did. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I was feeling a bit sniffly, but I've been through it, Steve, since then. It was very similar to January 2022 when I got COVID. So, you know, maybe mm-hmm. it's an annual thing now.
Will that be good if we repeat 2022 again, if we just do a do-over?
Do you think so? you and I spoke on New Year's Eve with our friend David, and then I spent the day and the evening with my sister, and we watched the fireworks. When midnight ticked over, I looked at a display which normally I sort of get quite proud at, like, oh, doesn't London look good? And and I watched it all, and I just said, why are we celebrating a new year? Like, everything is effed, isn't it?
We say that every year, though. So maybe this is the year it turns around. I celebrated the new year I think it was perfect. Surrounded by absolutely no one I knew. No, I mean, maybe there were. It was quite dark. I was. I watched the fireworks, the London fireworks from the end of a road near where I live. So you could see the wheel. I could watch it go off, and I had a can of gin and tonic, and I just stood there alone, cracked open the can, watched the fireworks, watched everyone else filming them on their phone from, 2 miles away, thought, you idiots. Then filmed a bit on my phone and then went home. And it was perfect. It was a perfect start to the new year. Fireworks were good, weren't they?
They were good. And the drones were good, weren't they? But, still. The idea of... Yeah, 2022 was such hard work. Let's hope this one's easier and better. And it already is, Steve, isn't it? Because the start of last year, we were our super special guest list was barren. We're kicking off 2023 with a bang. And truly is a happy new year because we're delighted to be joined this evening by Sir Charles Cecil.
Oh, Simon, it's always such a privilege. And Steve, it's always such a privilege to come on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, welcome, did you Charles.
Did they make you a sir in the New Year's honours?
No. There's no sirish whatsoever, I'm afraid. But I actually think, well, after David Cameron gave his wife's hairdresser an MBE, I have to say the whole thing just felt a little bit flat after that, because it is a little bit ludicrous. And, you know, I'm not going to rant on about our politicians, but by God.
I think anyway, it's all been devalued a bit, and you barely check the list anymore. That's right. you don't even look at your post. There's no point.
No, indeed. But no, it was a great. It was a great privilege, and you know, I'm very, very. I was very flattered and honoured. But no, sirring. Of course, Sir Ian Livingstone is he's been knighted, and you know, he's fantastic and good for him.
Good for him. Arise, Sir Ian. I was thinking actually as you were talking, but I noticed during the show intro, whilst the theme was playing, this new fancy software that we've got, which puts our three faces side by side, looked like the worst opening credits to Dallas. There's a reference for you kids there. But there's one thing that the three individuals on camera at the moment don't need at the moment. That's a hairdresser, isn't it?
Very true.
I can see why you're so disparaging, Charles.
I know.
Terribly sad. It is terribly sad to be kind of rude. The only thing is, I think that I lost all my hair when I worked for Activision back in the late 80s, and they put me under so much pressure, and it's been, you know, it's been relatively straightforward since then. So I'm going to blame them all, and in particular my boss's boss, Jeff Mulligan, who used to phone me at like midnight because it suited him, and he didn't care that it was, you know, for him it was Californian time. And for me, it was the middle of the night. And fool me, I'd always answer and jump to it. And I think I lost my hair at that time.
That sounds like there a lawsuit.
It does, especially
since if they do get bought by Microsoft, you know, that means you can attack Microsoft too, go straight to the top. You could be in charge of them this time next year.
Oh, just anything imagine is possible. In a sliding doors world, imagine if you'd never picked up. Then Activision might have gone under at that point.
I'm afraid it did go under. this is 1988-89, and it all collapsed. And there's some great stories actually, but I don't think I should tell them publicly. but one day I'll write a book. But ultimately, what happened was a company called the Disc Company came in and bought up all the assets, and then reinvented the name Activision, and the rest is history.
History and the future. Charles there just giving us an example of some of the anecdotes he will be telling during our interview section coming up. This is One Life Left. We're a video game radio show. We are going to talk about video games over the next hour. I've been playing some. Have you, Simon?
I've been playing one.
One, that's enough. We've got the video game news coming up where we'll read out some stories from websites around the internet and comment on them. Charles, are you ready to pass comment on the stories that we read out?
Yeah, very much so. Looking forward to it.
Okay, great. We've got letters and reviews coming up in the show as well. We don't have a feature this week because unfortunately our feature correspondent refused to do a feature. She said, "You do it."
She's tasted fame, hasn't she? Look, she's become a monster.
Indeed. It's time for the news.
It's 7:10 on Monday the 9th of January. I'm not Anne Scantleberry, but this is the news. Now, we left the show on a cliffhanger last year, Stee, and so it's important, I think, to address the news that we left hanging, that One Life Left listeners will be listening on tenterhooks to. Argentina won the World Cup.
Ah, sorry to break it to you like that. But
well, we've tied it back. Eurogamer wrote on the 19th of December that EA has used its FIFA series to correctly predict the winner of the World Cup for the fourth consecutive time. The entire tournament was simulated inside FIFA 23, which outputted Argentina as the ultimate winners, with Lionel Messi winning the Gold Boot and Emi Martinez winning the Golden Glove Awards. The predictions were published on November the 8th, long before the tournament had started. The game's ability to predict the winner for the fourth time in a row is testament to the accuracy of FIFA's official rankings. But of course, the uncertainty of the real world means that not everything was predicted correctly. For starters, it was, of course, France's Kylian Mbappe who won the Golden Boot after scoring a hat-trick in the final, which ultimately wasn't enough for the European team to beat Argentina. The game also predicted that Argentina would face Brazil in the final, with France in third place. Brazil was instead knocked out of the tournament in the quarter-final against Croatia. There we go, Steve.
They weren't the only people to predict it correctly, were they? Listeners to One Life Left will know that I predicted the results of the final correctly as well. I said Argentina would win based on a complex formula of deciding who I would least like to win. and I was right. So there we go.
Steve, who's going to win the FA Cup?
Who do I not want to win the FA Cup? That's a good question. I don't want QPR to win because you'd be insufferable.
Well, don't worry about that. The team have already fulfilled your wishes by exiting from the third round.
I was going to say Wrexham because it'd be quite a good Hollywood story, wouldn't it, for Welcome to Wrexham if they did go through. It'd be better if they got to the final and lost. I'm into football, sorry, just to conclude. I'm into football mostly for the schadenfreude, as I think a lot of football fans are. You don't gauge it by how much you want your team to win, but how much you want other people to suffer, because you know how much it hurts when your team lose. And as a Stockport fan, I know how much things hurt. So, yeah, I'll wait until we get closer to the end, and then I'll tell you how much misery I can inflict with my predictions.
Charles, you worked on a World Cup game, didn't you?
Simon, you promised me that you would not mention that ever again. It was it was a very, very fine World Cup game. Thank you for asking.
Well, so given how closely EA and FIFA have worked together and the restrictions that they've sort of pulled together, what was it like working on a World Cup game at the time? Because this was
the Arctic World Cup. Which, of course, was the base, would have been used to accurately predict who would have won Mexico 86, which is what it was called. I think you will find, and anybody who had the misfortune to buy that particular game, that the packaging was actually really good, because you got a wall chart with lots of little stickers. It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, really, there was not much more you could ask for, because, after all, when you buy a World Cup soccer game, you don't want to play the game. You want the stickers, don't you?
Well, indeed. Did you work closely with anybody on the game from the world of football?
Jesus, this is the 80s. You know, it doesn't. Absolutely not. No. It was US Gold had gone ahead in about 1985. And, well, no, it would have been 86. It could have been summer of 86, yeah. And we were given about 3 or 4 months to write it. And they came to us in an absolute panic. Jeff Brown, who was the owner and the founder, turned up in a Testarossa. We were in Hull. I don't think anybody had seen anything like it. People talked about it. He turned up in this Testarossa and said, "We're going to pay you quite a lot of money to write this game." That, frankly, he said, and I said, "Well, we've got very little time." He went, "No, you're fine. You just base it on the game you've got already." We went, "Really?" He went, "Yeah.
Broken sword.
We'll give you this deal." Exactly. We'll give you this game. Arctic's World Cup soccer. He said, "We'll give you all this money, but just don't tell anybody." So that was the deal. We weren't allowed to tell anybody.
Wow. When did that expire? Was it now?
6 months ago, Simon. And so I just thought I ought to save the exclusive for you, Steve, and your wonderful listeners.
Thank you so much. All right. New story 2, Simon?
New story 2. This is from videogameschronicle.com, written on the 4th of January. An analyst has predicted there won't be a next-gen Nintendo console this year, instead suggesting it will arrive in 2024. Speaking with GamesIndustry.biz as part of a feature given predictions for the upcoming year in video games, Piers Harding-Rolls, research director at Ampere Analysis, has predicted that Nintendo's next console won't arrive this year. I'm not expecting a next-gen Nintendo console in 2023. We have 2024 in our forecasts, Rolls Harding said, also stating that he expects The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom to sell plenty of Switch hardware. While Nintendo has yet to announce its plans for post-Switch hardware, speculation has mounted around Nintendo's plans for successor to the console, which launched in 2017. While the Nintendo Switch has not had a significant internal revision since its launch, the company has released two physical revisions, the Nintendo Switch Lite and Nintendo Switch OLED. According to Digital Foundry's John Linneman, there was a mid-generation refresh planned, but it never materialised. 2017, so we're now in space year 23, and there's no sign of a new Switch. Are we both surprised by that?
I'm not surprised by...
Sorry, you both. I'm one.
I'm not surprised by the analyst doing what analysts do, which is make the safest bet with their prediction. We are in 2023 now. It takes a while for a hype cycle to unfold. It is unlikely, if they haven't yet said they're going to drop a console, that something's going to come out this year. It's possible, back end of the year, but it's more likely that it'll come out next year. So nothing here is surprising. Now, whether the bigger picture, is it surprising that Nintendo haven't gotten with this already? I don't think so. It's already, it's making loads of money, right? It's been the standout success from this generation. And they've got, well, I don't know how many people, but millions and millions of people in their ecosystem buying digital goods, and they're profiting from every single sale. So I don't see there's a big rush for Nintendo there.
From a dev point of view, Charles, how do you are you surprised that you've not been given more power to play with yet from Nintendo?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Switch 4K that they promised 5 years ago. I'm going to be very naughty and completely change the subject. Because I was the proud owner for Christmas of a Steam Deck. And
Who was a good boy last year?
Well, I know. And I'm Mac-based work-wise, so it became a real pain whenever I wanted to play PC games. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal piece of kit. And I think that I think that Nintendo might have a bit of a run for their money, because obviously, the power of the Steam Deck is such that I think Nintendo probably do need to refresh the Switch. It's a great, great, great machine. Nintendo are a fantastic company. But I think they probably do need to come up with something more powerful and that feels a little bit more contemporary.
I don't know what they need that power for, though. Like, I haven't played a single game on the Switch where I've gone, oh, this would benefit from, you know, a better frame rate or fancier graphics or anything. Indeed, Nintendo's main franchises don't profit from the aesthetics that that kind of power grants, right? Now, sure, they're trying to broaden out into, I don't know, Call of Duty's is coming on the Switch or is on the Switch already, right?
That's one of the offers from Microsoft.
From Microsoft, right. And yeah, the next generation will need to support things like that. But the games that you buy a Nintendo platform for, does the next generation Mario Kart or Zelda or Mario need more power? I don't think so.
I sit firmly in between you two, lucky me, So when you think about Call of Duty, you think about Resident Evil, you think about some of the other AAA games, Control, etc. When they are on the Switch, they're cloud-based versions, which I don't think is a long-term solution, certainly not for what is, in theory, a portable console. Like you, Charles, I adore my Steam Deck. I went absolutely nuts in the Steam sale at Christmas, purely because of the Steam Deck. And I think, you know, what I, admittedly a hardcore gamer, do these days is now, if, you know, whereas a few years ago I would have preferred to have bought the Switch version of a game. Now I think twice about that because, you know, often a Switch version can be compromised from a visual mm-hmm. point of view or what have you, which you would be, which you would previously happily have traded off for convenience. Whereas now the Steam Deck will at least let you play it for about half an hour if you're playing a demanding game on the train. However, the simplistic console experience, which appeals to core Nintendo fans, turn it on, play it, it works, is the absolute opposite of a Steam Deck. So, you know, there have been games that have been verified on the Steam Deck, which is Valve's rating for how, you know, easy they are to play on a Steam Deck, whether you need to do any internal, any tinkering yourself. There are games that have been verified before, which are now suddenly unsupported because EA has introduced a new launcher. Or and that as a player is like a right nightmare. Equally, there are games that are listed as unsupported on the store that you buy and you can play on your Steam Deck. So we're in this really weird world where you've got this badge of this sort of certificate saying how well it plays on your Steam Deck. Yet even when you buy it, you've got no confidence in whether it's going to work or not. Now, thankfully, the Steam store is super consumer friendly and lets you refund a game if you've played it under 2 hours and within 2 weeks, the opposite of many other digital storefronts. So actually, in some sense, that doesn't matter. You can buy it, download it, see if it works, and if it doesn't, you can get a refund. You know, so when you think about, we were playing Mario Kart only earlier today, and that's still a wonderful experience on Switch. Nintendo has the secret sauce to the hardware, and all of its games are technically proficient, whereas everybody else mm-hmm. seems to struggle. So, yes, Steve, you're right. I think for Nintendo games, we absolutely are mm-hmm. perfectly served at the moment. However, for games that came out last year and are coming out this year that also have Switch versions, I think, you know, often you really do need to know that they are decent versions before you're happy to commit.
Well mediated, Simon. Well done.
Thanks. Nintendo Switch was the UK's best-selling console in 2022, while FIFA 23 topped the annual software sales charts. According to GfK sales data published on GamesIndustry.biz, 2 million games consoles were sold in the UK last year, down 29% compared to 2021. Drop was mainly attributed to PS5 supply shortages and a decline in Switch sales. Nintendo's console ended the year as the best-selling console, ahead of PS5 and third-place Xbox Series XS, although fewer than 60,000 units separated the three systems. On the software front, FIFA 23 was last year's best-selling game, ahead of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. Elden Ring charted number 4, followed by Grand Theft Auto 5, God of War, Ragnarok, FIFA 22, Horizon Forbidden West, Red Dead Redemption 2, and Nintendo Switch Sports. In total, 34.2 million games were sold last year, which was down almost 6% compared to 2021. 9.2 million accessories is how that story ends. So, the Switch wins, but it was pretty close last year.
This is usually, those stats-based stories are usually where you ask me a question about what's been selling and what games are on that top 10 list and how many I can name. I am relieved because there are some of those games that I definitely wouldn't have put there. Like really big numbers for Switch Sports, not Wii Sports.
Yeah.
And I'm very surprised Skywalker Saga sold more than Elden Ring as well. That's astonishing.
Was it on? It was on more formats, wasn't it?
Right.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well. Yeah, and also interesting to see old games doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
This is UK only, of course. So yes. Interesting. I would say. Well, I'm sorry. The reason I was skipping around was that we've got another story that I was, which I couldn't find. Oh, here it is. Which touches on something that we talked about before, where new games are very, very quickly discounted. And I think Skywalker Saga, released in the summer, did pretty well. But towards Christmas, it was quite heavily on promotion. So that must have been a driver for those sales as well. Brilliant game, I will add. Unlike some of the other games that do get heavily discounted very quickly.
That really felt like you were subtweeting Charles right there.
The way
you delivered that, like, unlike some of the games, well, who's listening to this? It's just me and Charles. One of us, you're aiming that out. I haven't put out any games for 4 or 5 years, so...
I was talking to the listeners and addressing games
right.
Like...
So you were Gotham, subtweeting one of them?
Gotham Knight. Well, no, we've talked about this.
I know.
I was astonished over Christmas to see... you know, FIFA, which came out in September, just before Christmas, was 60% off on all formats. You could get it for £12 on Xbox. Gotham Knights was down 50%, a game that came out in October. Need for Speed, which came out in the beginning of December, was, I think... 40% off on Steam by the end of the year.
Wow.
All of these AAA games are seem to come out 1 minute, and then 5 minutes later, you can pick them up at substantially discounted price. The news story I was going to reference was about Marvel's Midnight Sun, which is not a bad game. It's done very, very well. Less than a month after, or so seemingly has done very, very well. Less than a month after launch, it's 33% off on all platforms. There's only so long you can continue this aggressive discounting of AAA games at launch before you kill that launch market, surely.
What do you think the strategy is?
Sorry, can I just add in? I think you're absolutely right, Simon, and I think you've got to be honest and either release it at the price, because we're talking about games now at £70. And if they're going to be discounted a month later, then nobody's going to buy them at £70 because they know that they're going to have to, they'll be paying, you know, £50 in a month's time. We just, to put my hands up in defense with Beyond a Steel Sky, I think we waited about a year for a 30% discount. And it has dropped, but it's dropped over 2 years. So I'm completely on your side. I think let's be honest about what, you know, these games are going to sell for, rather than whacking them in at a huge, great retail price and then discounting straight away.
Yeah. And look, I think discounting is a completely valid strategy. But just going so hard, so early, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise that the companies that are doing it are beholden to shareholders. And so what they're doing is they create a lot of hype at launch, and then they're immediately sort of bumping those sales up. Now, I think what we haven't quite worked out is what that step and that frequency should be, because, you know, obviously pricing is hugely important, and people don't ever want to devalue the work that they've done and the effort that they poured in. And I think that you can go too slowly, because... you know, if people then start moving on or start forgetting about your game, and if they, you know, then you need to discount quite hard to get them interested in it again. But yeah, it's triple A rather than anything Charles or I are doing. <That's>, is the concern for me. You know, people will start to notice this stuff. But I've lost track here, Steve. There's a couple of other stories because we're running late. Let's finish up on this. Electronic Arts doesn't expect to be able to recover the majority of Madden NFL 23 franchise saves files that were corrupted last week due to a data storage issue. In a forum post, the publisher apologised for the issue, which impacted players who logged into franchise leagues between around 2:45 Eastern Time on December the 28th and 5:45 a.m. Eastern Time on December the 29th. Unfortunately, if you logged into franchise leagues during this time, your data was affected due to a data storage issue that resulted in franchise files being corrupted, the publisher said. Franchise mode is a long-running Madden NFL game mode, which lets players manage a team over multiple seasons. First off, we're sorry that this happened, EA said. We know how important your franchises are to you, and we are actively working on a fix to restore some files via a backup as soon as possible. However, not all affected leagues can be restored. The team is currently projecting around 40% of leagues to be recovered. It's unclear in total how many people have been affected by the issue. EA said it plans to deliver a timeline this week around the potential restoration of save files from a backup. If you logged in during the above window, we encourage you to start a new franchise as this as the mode is up is running, it added. Yeah, what a nightmare. I mean, thank goodness we don't care about American football, eh? But I picked the story because it highlights a very real challenge on cloud connected devices. God, can you imagine?
I mean, I suppose this isn't just about...
You would have thought that 101 of service is you keep that data really, really safe, which clearly they didn't.
Like, it's not just about cloud connections either. It's about the perils of games that are constantly updated, live service games, because if you are updating the core game, and that is treating save games in a different way, adding content, removing content, then there's always the chance you can damage the saved games of someone. Now, whether they're stored locally or remotely, you can do damage to those. And we've seen incidents like this before, nothing as widespread as this, and nothing with that kind of, sorry, guys. Yeah, just, in many ways, you know, the fun is in the game, isn't it? So we're just giving you more content. You know?
Exactly. Just, you lot love franchises. Do another one.
Yeah, so that sucks. But again, there's very, very little chance of it affecting any of us. So well done, us, for our uninterest in American football, I guess. Although I watched the Super Bowl, Simon. Surely you
did. Of course you do, Steve.
Do you not?
It's on very late.
I know, but special day.
Well, they're coming up soon, Steve. I look forward. Have we asked EA who's going to win it?
Good point. Let's bet One Life Left's house on
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Or on my misanthropic prediction. Is that all the news?
That's all the news.
All right. Thanks, Simon. One Life Left video game news with Anne Scantleberry.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season or arc has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
You're listening to One Life Left on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're a video game radio show. My name is Steve Curran. I'm joined by Simon Byron and super special guest Charles Cecil, who we're going to talk to right now.
Charles, we're genuinely, sometimes it can be a bit of a trudge getting up to the shed on a Sunday evening, coming to work. but I skipped up today, which was slightly challenging, actually. We ran very heavy rain. Great to see you on the show. When was the last time you were on?
It was probably about 2 years ago. In fact, what happened, Simon, was that you phoned me. I was just coming out of the pub. And as you know, I very rarely drink. But I happened to have been drinking in this particular occasion. And you phoned me up and you said, right, you're live now. And it was all, I felt a little bit embarrassed. I hope I didn't make too much of a fool of myself. This time, at least you had the decency to give me a day's notice. Two days' notice. Thank you.
Many days' notice. Actually, I gave our listeners some notice on our Discord. And they were very excited. And we asked whether they had any questions that they would like to ask you, because you told me in advance you weren't ready to confirm specifics on what you're up to next, although we will get this out of you later on. Ken Jara wrote, is he coming on to exclusively announce the next Broken Sword?
Isn't it brilliant?
Yes or no?
Isn't it absolutely brilliant that people care enough? I mean, it's such a huge privilege. And, of course, there will be another Broken Sword at some point. We have so much new. There's so much going on at the moment. And I'm just always really, really flattered that people care so much. So thank you so much for the question, which I'm going to very skillfully sidestep.
You didn't sidestep. You just announced another Broken Sword at some point.
Coming. There you go. Exclusive. Yeah. We need an exclusive jingo. Ken Jara goes on to ask, I'd like to know if he were to get the chance to make a Tintin game, which episode will he base it on? He clearly loves Tintin.
Oh, what a good question. What a good question. There are some Tintins that used to be popular in the 70s that are now deemed utterly inappropriate, as indeed they are. So it certainly wouldn't be one of those.
Good sidestep, Charles.
Yeah. No. I've been very good at this. Captain Haddock and the... I tell you what, the black gold, I think it's called, which is where they go into the desert and looking for oil and get attacked. That's the one I'm going to pull out just because it's probably well fairly done. Clear that I can't actually think of any really clever answers.
Smart dev choice, Charles, because it's in the desert and it all looks the same, doesn't it? It's just loads of sand.
It does, and a texture, you know, just it's mm-hmm. just get Unreal or Unity, just plug in the sand simulator, and that's it.
There you go, bosh done, ship it.
Bit of water, now, bit of Charles, water simulator, and you can have an oasis. God, what more do you want?
Well, that leads into the next question, actually, and you know, you don't need to listen to the show, Charles, because you feature very, very frequently in it when we talk about you and Fond. And the things that you do. And Morgeezy has written in and said, for super special Sir Charles, you emerge Ursula Andress-like from the sea. What's the first thing that catches your eye?
Stee and his wife.
Exactly.
That was... Well, do you know what? The last time I saw Stee was in Croatia. It was fantastic. And I ran off the edge of a pontoon, jumped into the water, which I have to say wasn't deep enough, so I rather jarred my elbow, staggered out trying to look manly, to be confronted by Stee, his wonderful daughter, and his wonderful wife, and news that Stee is now the senior vice president of business development of Spaghetti Games. So he told me.
Can't wait to tell my wife that I have a wife.
Now that's very naughty, isn't it? That is very naughty. You see, I'm so out of touch. I should have said the missus, but that's probably not allowed either. Your partner, your lover. Lover is such a wonderful. Yes, your lover.
You know, it's exactly the word I was thinking when Charles emerged from the ocean. Like,
exactly.
Beautiful, beautiful sight. It is probably for the best that Charles doesn't listen to the show, given the number of times we've brought this up.
His weasel spoon touches on some other topics of conversation. Sir Charles, what's your daily routine? Is it 5 a.m. at the gym, 11 a.m. at the whiskey, or something in between? If you carve out time to play games, what's your current game of choice?
Oh, thank you. Well, as I say, I'm a very proud recipient of a Steam Deck. And I, of course, played Return to Monkey Island. I mean, one had to. And it was great, and I enjoyed it. The one that I think... I was really looking forward to was Immortality, of course, from Sam Barlow, which is in many ways incredible and in many ways not. So, it's just fantastic. But I have to say, I do play it sitting up in bed with a cushion behind my head and just really enjoy it. Vampire Survivors is another one I played a bit of. Citizen Sleeper. It's just fantastic to have all of these games, which you can just play on your Steam Deck. That's not to say, you know, that I've given up on my iPad, which I also love, and also my Switch. My Switch is not quite as loved as it was, you know, maybe a month ago when the Steam Deck arrived in its box.
Stuart, who's listening now, says that he's just started replaying the Broken Sword games on his Steam Deck. In light of the exclusive announcement, should he be rushing through them or taking his time? That's a really good question, Stuart. Thank you.
This just to be absolutely clear, because our wonderful community manager Wendy is going to string me up by a very painful part of my anatomy if there's any sense of an exclusive reveal. So all I would say is you don't need to feel like you need to rush, but you know, enjoy replaying them. You don't have anything to fear about, you know, having to cut anything short.
Thank you for those questions, listeners. So Charles,
yes,
if everything well with you? I mean, I've not seen you in person for probably since G
I've probably not seen you since GDC, have I? What have you been up to since?
That GDC? Was that the GDC where you and Jason absolutely rumbled me? Oh my God, that was terrifying.
Well, that was one GDC where we rumbled you. To be fair, that was Jason that did. Oh, please, if you're happy to tell the story, absolutely.
I am. So we met with Apple. This would have been 2017, probably Gamescom 2017, and we signed very, very strict NDAs, and they asked us what we were working on, and at that time it was Beyond a Steel Sky. And then they invited us to be part of Apple Arcade, which was a huge privilege. And it was, you know, absolutely wonderful working with Apple. But by God, their NDA was, their non-disclosure agreement was absolutely terrifying. And I was terrified that, because I cannot keep a secret. If, for God's sake, if there's anything that you
when,
kept
Wendy
secret.
Wendy knows that, Charles.
Wendy does know that. So for example, they asked me to record some stuff for them at GDC, and I climbed under into the bed and recorded it because I knew that I was just terrified that somebody was going to hear it from next door. Anyway, so I am super, super cautious, and I meet you and Jason. Oh, I've just swum from Alcatraz, and you guys are great.
Swum from Alcatraz.
so with, and emerged Angela Andrus like from the water, but anyway. So Jason, who's, I mean, you're both super smart, but Jason sort of asked me what I'm doing, and I said, "Oh, you know, I'm staying for an extra few days," and I kind of look, give him the, "Oh, what a clever person I am, because you can't possibly know why I'm staying for a couple of days," and then the next day I bump into you guys, and he says, "I've worked it out." You're staying for the Apple launch, so therefore you must have a game on Apple Arcade. And the colour absolutely drained from my face, because I thought that this was the biggest secret that could never, ever be cracked. And Jason had cracked it in about 2 minutes talking to me. And it absolutely, you know, I was terrified. Having said that, I turned up a few days later at the launch in Apple Park, and tweeted a picture of myself outside the Steve Jobs theater, and some of the wonderful Apple folk did get very cross with me because they thought that I was actually, you know, jumping the gun. And anyway, it was all forgotten and forgiven. But yeah, so I think. But did I see you next? I don't remember if I saw you a GDC later.
No, the last GDC I saw you was the dinner that we had. You,
yeah, we went for dinner.
Last year, yes.
We were both there.
Steve, yes, C was were. There as well.
You were.
But, you know, I think that was that the last time I saw you in person? I know that we speak quite frequently, but it's the last time I saw you in person. Anyway,
I think
what are you up to? what are you up to these days? What are you working on?
Simon, you almost caught me out there, but you know, my super sleuth senses, I could see through that one. We are working, we're working on a number of projects, and I promise you, they're really, really exciting. I just promise you. And everybody would say that because that's what people say. But I do have the wrath of Wendy, like the sword of Damocles. It is over my head, having to choose between wanting to spill the beans and talk about it all, versus the threat of what Wendy will do if I do. So I'm afraid that Wendy's just too terrifying.
I have a question, which is a half guess, right? And it's been on my mind for, I don't know, 15 years or something. Long time ago, Charles, when I was working at Zoe Mode, there was talk of a charity game thing called One Big Game. And I had a meeting with them because they were, I wanted to get involved and do a game for One Big Game. In the end, I ended up doing Chime, one of the games that I'd made before, with One Big Game. But there was talk of a game that Charles Cecil was working on back then, which I thought just had this really, really strong pitch, which was this: narrative Minesweeper. That's it. Minesweeper, but an adventure game as well. Never, I mean, I don't know what happened to that, but is that one of the games that's coming out? And if not, can one of us make it? Yeah, it should
be. Yes. Can I consult on it, please, Steve?
Let's all make it together.
Yeah, that would be great.
I've got nothing to contribute.
This was a fellow called Martin DeRonte.
Simon, you can publish it. Yeah, Martin.
Yes.
That's right.
This was a fellow, Martin, good, bright guy, Martin DeRonte.
And handsome too.
Sorry? Handsome.
Handsome. Very too, handsome. Yeah, very handsome man.
It's all right. He doesn't listen,
tall,
Charles. We can
tall,
talk about
dark.
It.
Yeah. No. Gorgeous, really. I agree.
All right. So we're going to make that game.
They all are. Brilliant. They're all tall and gorgeous.
Yeah.
Very good. Simon, we're really low on time.
I know. Let's do a letter.
Okay, quickly. Let's do a letter.
Letters. Chris Conroy writes, "Dear team and extraordinarily super special guest, Happy New Year, wishing you all the very best for 2023 and another wonderful year, setting new records for longest running video games radio show, literally untouchable at this stage. I was delighted to hear that Sir Charles was coming on the show, as it gives me the chance to check to make sure that his knees are okay after I affectionately but misguidedly sat on his Santa knee at the 2017 Mariochi Christmas party. He was very generous about it, saying, 'Most people have sat on the arm of the chair, but you're welcome where you are.'" I'm going to interrupt here, Charles. Charles, that can't have been the first time you've used that line, can it? So thanks, Charles.
I'm talking to Simon Parkin in the week, and he was my little helper. He was a little helper, and I couldn't believe it. All you said to me was, "Just dress up as Father Christmas and give out gifts." And everybody sat on my leg. I just did not know what to do. I didn't know what to do. It's just as well I had a wig and a long fake beard, because I just indeed, and thank you. And well, there were some fairly heavy lads that sat on my knee as well. And I have to say, if you are one of them, then my knees have just about recovered. Thank you so much for asking.
He says, "Thank you, Charles. You made this old adventurous night." One of my other memorable Cecil events was the many hours I spent trying to figure out how to get through the dragon caverns in Lure of the Temptress, wandering back and forwards, trying to solve what to early teen me was a really tough puzzle. My mother had decided this was when she was going to watch what I was playing, and I think she had a hard time believing I wasn't trying to misdirect her, and that somewhere beyond this obtuse puzzle was a game that had all the bawdy delights of the box art. She was partly right, of course. Great times. So a question for Mr. C. Across all your games, do you have a favourite puzzle, or one that you look back on and think, maybe that was a bit too much? Your Christmas crush correspondent, Chris Conroy.
Thank you, Chris. Can I just tell you the story about the bawdy artwork, though? And I've said it many times, but forgive me, I'll be very quick. So basically, we were writing this game and came up with a number of crappy titles. And then the head of marketing, who at the time was a woman called Alison Beasley, phoned me up and said, "Right, we need to have a name. Come up with some names." So I came up with loads of names, and I'm sure that all of them were rubbish. And at the bottom, I put Lure of the Temptress in brackets. We can't really call it this. And she phoned me up and she said, "We really want this to be called Lure of the Temptress. We think it's a great name." And I said, "Alison, there's no luring and there's no temptress." And there was a silence. And she said, "Can you put one in?" So, Chris, I'm afraid that a lot of the stuff that went into that was because we, and this is a lesson in life, don't tell marketing people anything that you actually, unless you're deadly serious about it, because they will grasp it and take it off on a tangent. And I mean, Alison is wonderful, but she made us rewrite the whole story, add a whole lot of section, because there was no temptress at all. And by the end, there was. So that's the story of the caves and the big monster and all the stuff that we added to try and make the game fit the name. So apologies, and I hope you were able to get through those caves in the end. The one I have to, if you're talking about my own puzzles, sorry if I'm being egotistical, then you know I am very affectionate about the goat one, because it was a crap puzzle and it was really unfair. And you know, it really showed how naive I was. And yet, there are so many people that talk so affectionately about it. And you know, that just basically shows what a wonderful community we have. I mean, I'm sure across the game, but particularly in the adventure field, we just have lovely people who, even when they're given a really crappy, unfair puzzle, turn it into something that's sort of heroic and fun. And Yeah, so that's the one I'm going to choose.
What was it about the goat puzzle that sticks out? I mean, why was it so controversial?
Right. Well, what happened was that when we wrote Adventure Games, a proportion of people who were very vocal understood the grammar. And what they'd do is they'd get through very quickly and then they'd complain. So what I thought is, haha, I'm going to stop them in their tracks and I'll come up with a puzzle. And the reason it was controversial is that it changes the way that the UI works midway through. And so, of course, for those people who really understood the grammar, that were they loved it because they were stopped for 10, 15 minutes and they could continue. But for the vast majority of people, they had absolutely no idea how to move forward. And of course, in those days, it was before the internet. So they had to wait a month before the magazines, or even 2 months, before their magazines started printing what the solutions were. But then again, people played games differently then. People, I think in some ways, liked the fact that they were being frustrated. And, you know, that is just not like that now. People want to move forward. They don't want to be blocked in the same way. It was different times. And I know that we're running out of time, but I really knew that I'd, reached the big time when I was in London and in a taxi a couple of years ago. And the taxi driver went, oh, so where are you off to? And I said, I'm off to, I can't remember, Microsoft or Sony or whatever. He went, oh, what do you do? And I write games. Oh, any I've heard of, he said. And I went, no, I doubt it. Because I knew that he'd be a FIFA or a Call of Duty or whatever. And he went, go on, try me. So I said, Broken Sword. And he looked round at me and he went, are you the bastard that invented the goat puzzle then? And you, when cabbies in London are swearing at you because of the game. And I felt really proud.
Perfect. Perfect. That's our only letter we've got time for this week. If you want to write a letter to One Life Left, you can do so by emailing
team@onelifeleft.com.
Or you can join us on our Discord to chat about all of this, to listen to the show live as we record it on Sunday night, which you can find at hello.onelifeleft.com. And you can stick letters on the Discord as well. You're listening to One Life Left on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're also a podcast. You can find that, again, at hello.onelifeleft.com, or if you want to go straight to www.onelifeleft.com, that works too. There you can find the show notes written by our under-caretaker and producer, Phil. Thank you so much.
Cheers,
to him.
Phil.
Happy New Year, Phil. You'll also find any links, helpful links, that kind of explanatory stuff if you don't get what we are doing here. You'll find your answer there, or, often we don't get what we're doing here either. But we're still here, Simon, 2006 to 2023.
Is that right?
17 years.
If I could be bothered, right? Yeah. I was going to say, do the math. Wow, we're almost an adult, Steve.
What are we going to do next year when we're 18? World's our oyster.
Start drinking.
Brilliant. Right, we've got to get on with this. Time for the reviews. Simon, what have you been playing over our Christmas break?
So, very briefly, I've been playing, much to my surprise. I'm not sure if you noticed what's started happening towards the end of the year. Ubisoft started returning to Steam. They'd previously gone off elsewhere and decided to go alone. But over the last few months, they've been putting games back on, and they've been launching them with a significant discount, which I don't mind in this instance. Rather than putting, because these games are effectively 2 or 3 years old, there was Assassin's Creed Valhalla, there was one other I can't remember, and then there was Immortals Fenyx Rising, which was their Breath of Wild alike. That they launched on Stadia and Switch, which is where I played it previously, and PlayStation and Xbox before. It is an unashamed, I was going to say ripoff. I'm not going to say that, just in case I can get into trouble for it. Homage, tribute to Breath of the Wild. I mean, there is so much about it which shares the same DNA. Obviously not up to the same standards as the Nintendo-designed game, but it's exactly the same. And if you like Breath of the Wild, and who doesn't, and you want to play a game that is certainly not good, it's definitely not bad, It is the very definition of a 7 out of 10 game, which is, it's just completely fine. Completely fine. There are four major dungeons in Breath of the Wild. There are four gods you need to free before tackling the sort of main game's objective. I've just freed the fourth god. It's really straightforward. It has some puzzles that are fine and that won't get shouted at you by a taxi driver. The combat is okay. It has bosses that you can conquer in the first go. I'm having a fine old time. It cost me £12.50. It's 2 years old. It's absolutely fine, 7 out of 10.
I have been playing an unashamed rip-off as well, Simon. Or tribute, oh, yes. Or homage, who can tell? I've been playing Disney's Dreamlight Valley. Now, have you experienced this, either of you?
No, I went to... I'm trying to get Ramona to start playing games, and I looked at buying it physically. It's not available physically yet. Mm-hmm. I do see you pop up my Steam friend that's playing it all the time, Steve.
Mm. Well, it's not me, is it? It's my daughter, isn't it? Clearly, who's playing it at 11:30 p.m. at night. Here's what happened. I didn't play it for a while. It is a tribute or homage or rip-off of Animal Crossing, except for with Disney characters. You start in a village. It's empty, overgrown with weeds or thorns. In this case, you clean up the thorns, and then you can invite Disney characters to come and live with you. You solve little quests, you build them houses, you open Scrooge McDuck's store where you can buy new furniture, you can change your outfit. It has everything that Animal Crossing has, and it's all brilliantly executed. Really, really lovely UI, like fantastic animation, and it's very wholesome. The one major difference is, unlike Animal Crossing, it is not gated. So Animal Crossing slices your time up and says you can only play it for 20 minutes a day, and then it gets boring, basically. There isn't that much to do. Disney has none of that. By the time you have finished picking up the sticks that litter your village or mining, the rocks will have replenished, the sticks will be back, you can do that again. There is always stuff for you to do. And it has, you know, premium currencies in there, Fortnite inspired as well, Battle Pass inspired, things like that. So I was excited for my daughter to play this, but also wary, because it has practices that I know can be addictive and are designed to be addictive, and I didn't want her to experience those. So I warned her of those and said, we're only going to play this for 20 minutes, half an hour a day, and that's it. And she was fine with that, and so we started. And then I got addicted and started playing it for 4 or 5 hours a day, just tidying my village in the name of helping her out. Because if I do this tomorrow, there'll be more for her to do and she won't see the evil side of this game. She won't see any of this stuff. Anyway, all done. Very good. Got addicted to it. Needn't have worried, because she's too scared to open up the beach segment of the game because Ursula from The Little Mermaid might be down there. She doesn't want to do that. And because of that, all of the characters we've unlocked now are like, so can we go to the beach? And she's like, absolutely not. And the game is stuck where it is. So we're now not playing it anymore. But while we did, I was addicted and she thought it was okay. 7 out of 10.
Charles, what have you been playing?
Well, I'm going to go back to Immortality because, if you don't mind, because the... It's basically the gameplay is that there are three films that you... cut between. You highlight something of interest, a hotspot in one particular film, it'll jump to the next. The story is wonderfully told, the acting is fantastic, the idea is fantastic. If it could have delivered the same level of gameplay and a detective gameplay of Her Story, it would be 9 out of 10. But I feel that he's just gone slightly, slightly short on the gameplay. And because of that, 7 out of 10.
Thanks, Charles. That concludes our review section and essentially concludes our first show of the year as well, doesn't it, Simon?
It does, Steve. We're right up against it, aren't we? We didn't have time for any other business.
No None Simon Byron's Fast Five of Best Games of 2022.
Yeah, let's keep those away from the show this year, shall we?
Yeah, we've got about another 30 seconds, so just time to tell you we have a Mariochi event coming up on the 21st of January in London. Tickets are on sale now. You'll find those on the Mariochi Twitter, which is
Well, you can go to hello.mario.ke or twitter.com/singmariokey. So please join us for that if you want to sing stupid pop songs about video games. By next week, Simon and I will be able to tell you whether we're going to be at GDC. Charles, will you be there?
Oh, yes. And I shall look forward to, if you do come, let's go out for dinner again, because it's always lovely to see you guys in person.
What, you've got an Apple Arcade exclusive with you?
What a way to end the show. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Charles. We'll see you all next week. Until then,
bless you.
Goodbye.
Thanks so much. Bye. Happy New Year. Happy New Year.